content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Romany Arrowsmith from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Rookie Magazine. And the theme for today is actually taken from the title of the first article, which I thought was such a good title. It's My Body is a Tuning Fork. It's an interview with the rapper Lizzo, and I thought that was just such an interesting idea. Okay, without further ado, this first article from Rookie Magazine, which is, as I said, is an interview with the rapper Lizzo. So much of the mainstream dialogue around learning to love yourself is puddle deep and unhelpful, treating the matter like a simple decision instead of the long process it really is. For that reason, Lizzo's My Skin is one of the most important songs of the year. That, and it's incredibly beautiful. In the track, the 27-year-old Minneapolis-based rapper, whose birth name is Melissa Jefferson, confronts the struggle to love her body unconditionally, the ties to her family and history written deep within her skin, and how the power of owning your flaws outweighs the danger of being mocked for who you are. I woke up like this, she sings in a cheeky nod to Beyoncé, who inspired Lizzo to start forming girl groups when she was in the fifth grade. Since then, she's also been a classical flutist, a fantasy novel writer, a serious scholar, a songwriter, a singer, and a rapper. Okay, so the interviewer asks, I saw on Instagram that you're working with Sadie Dupuy from Speedy Ortiz. What are you two up to? We had the opportunity to work on some stuff together, a remix and an original song. It's so different from what I do. It was a challenge, actually, to work with her, and I'm excited by it. I feel like I met the challenge. Even though you're established as a solo artist now, is collaboration still important? Lizzo, yes, it's where I came from. It's where I feel the most comfortable. I'm a huge sharer. I really, really respect who I collaborate with. Interviewer, when you make stuff by yourself, do you have a sounding board? Like people whose opinion you trust? Lizzo, yes and no. There are some producers who give me a lot more freedom. When I'm in the studio, they're like, that's what you're doing. That's great. Other times I work with a producer who's like, no, absolutely not. Let's tweak this. So my sounding boards vary, but I like to think of myself as one too. When I'm listening to something, if it doesn't feel right, I gotta change it. My body reacts. My body is like a tuning fork. If the vibrations are off, I freak out. I've read that you grew up in a religious household and that you were restricted from engaging with a lot of pop culture. How did you deal with that? Lizzo, that was from ages 0 to 10, when my family was in Detroit. I'm appreciative of it, actually. I was going to find hip-hop. It was something that I was destined to do, but delaying it let me find other types of music and understand the roots of where hip-hop came from. It was begotten from gospel because gospel was the first form of black music in America. Finding gospel first, I think, was important. I was able to evolve from there. When you watch me live, the gospel comes out real hard. So I use it as a tool, and I'm very, very thankful. Interviewer, what was your involvement in music at that time? Were you in a choir? Oh no, I did not sing. Everyone else sang. I just listened, and I would clap. I was little, and I wasn't really seen as a singer. My family thought I was very bookish. They thought I was going to be an English teacher or something. I still try to go to church, but the band's gotta be good. I gotta seek out churches where the band is good, because it's some of my favorite music. Gospel gets the largest emotion out of me, out of any genre. Interviewer, when did you start wanting to perform, or to sing? I discovered the flute first, and then somewhere around 13 or 14, I decided to rap. I didn't actually think I could sing until my early 20s. I joined a rock band when I was 19. They were looking for a singer, and I kind of lied that I could sing. When I got to the audition, I was going to tell them I was actually a rapper, but something weird happened. The band wasn't a genre I thought I could rap over, so instead of playing their music, I started making up stuff and yelling into the microphone. I didn't know what I was doing, and they liked it. I started off so big, like Cedric Bixler, loud. I didn't really see myself as a solo artist until way later. I was very much a collaborator, scared of being out by myself, being looked at. It was a long journey getting to where I am now. I'm kind of a late bloomer. Interviewer, do you remember what the first pop culture you discovered was? Lizzo, I remember when Tupac died. I remember my cousin was really sad. I was trying to wrap my mind around that whole phenomenon and what it meant to an entire culture of people. I'd had a small glimpse into pop culture. It was hip-hop culture that I had to stay away from as a kid. So the first thing that hit me when Tupac died was, this exists. Then after that, it was TRL. My sister loved pop music, so I'd get little glimmers of NSYNC and Backstreet Boys while I was working on my flute. Interviewer, what was the first music that really became yours? Oh my god, Destiny's Child. I love Destiny's Child so much. We eventually moved to Houston when I was 10, and there were all these stories of how everyone knew them and what it was like when they were little girls running around in heels, practicing, training to be the greatest R&B group of all time. I wanted my own Destiny's Child so bad, and I would audition girls in my class to sing. We'd call each other, and I'd be like, now you sing, you sing. I'd write these songs, would write the harmonies out, and we'd all sing them. I loved Destiny's Child, and of course I loved Beyoncé so much. But then on the other side of things, BTK with Omarion, I just loved B2K. That was the first band that I had a poster of on my wall. Didn't you skip school? Sorry, this is the interviewer. Didn't you skip school to see Destiny's Child at a Walmart? Yeah, my sister got me out of school to see Destiny's Child sing. It was a massive Walmart, and it was back when CD sales still existed. I think people think they were in Walmart snapping their fingers, but no, it was an outdoor stage. It was huge. I remember being so grateful for that. I was in literature class, and they were like, would Melissa please come to the principal's office? And my sister was waiting, and we just went. It was so awesome. They sang this song called Gospel Medley that they used to do a ton. They would sing three-part harmonies, and there was this huge finale with an amen. I remember getting goosebumps. I wanted to do that. I wanted to make people feel something like they made me feel with music. Interviewer, I love that you auditioned girls over the phone to be in your group. That seems so confident. Were you always an outgoing kid? Oh my god, it's hard for me to tell because of course I was teased. I'm a chubby girl. I was always a big girl. I was also still very bookish, so they'd call me all sorts of nerd things, but when I grew out of that and started finding myself and my identity, my personality has always been as big as I am. Even when I wasn't fully developed, I still was super myself, whatever that means. I just remember being so serious about these groups. It was terrifying having to sing. When I sang for my friends, I had to walk all the way away from them and turn around and look out of the window. It was so scary. I was so serious about it, though. It was something in my mind that had to be done. The auditions had to be done by any means necessary. That was how it operated. Interviewer, where had that serious side come from? Lizzo, as much as I'm funny, I was a very serious child, and when it comes to business, I am a very serious woman. I can handle things, but on the flip side, I'm an extrovert, so I can make tons and tons and tons of jokes. I can be very serious, and I think that it comes with experience. Some people are born into this world with experience, and some are born with more experience than others. I was born with a level of experience that brought me to my destiny quicker, brought me to my purpose quicker. I think I navigated using that. It's not always fun or pretty, but I definitely get to where I need to go by following that. What I'm doing is really important, and I feel like I gotta handle it seriously, for lack of a better word. At this time, were you thinking of music as something you could do later in life? When did that come? That's the interviewer. Lizzo, the thing is, I got a confirmation in the 8th grade, which I won't really say much about because it's something that's really sacred to me. It freaks me out sometimes. I was thinking about this last night, being who I am, being a big girl, about to be on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and the message I'm about to bring, bringing big girl dancers and the message that we're doing now with my skin and the people who are supporting me. I had this weird confirmation in the 8th grade that floats around in me, reverberates in my mind sometimes when I'm out working. And so I knew since then, no matter what I decided to do, it would have to do with music. And it would be a platform, whether that platform was small, medium size, large, or extra large. I knew that I was going to have to carry an important message and do it through music. Now, that being said, I didn't know how to make money. I didn't know what it was going to take. I remember being 20 and I was like, oh, is this a career thing? I was still waiting tables, doing retail, selling makeup. I always wanted this team of people, and trying to find a team was the hardest thing in the world. Then something clicked into place when I moved to Minneapolis, and everything started happening. Flowers just started blooming. Interviewer. Two songs that really stand out on the new record are En Vogue and My Skin. They go beyond self-acceptance to dealing with really loving yourself. What was your process of coming to love yourself? It's hard, and a lot of that rhetoric is so simplistic. Like that silly meme that's like, how to get a bikini body. Have a bikini, put it on body, when there's no way it's that easy. Lizzo. Ha ha ha, that's great. There's a lot of freedom when you aren't worried about what people think about you. I think my freedom came from realizing that I am out there and people are going to have thoughts and that's not going to change. I remember one day I woke up after exercising a ton. The thing is, I was unhealthy as a child. I definitely developed some really unhealthy habits outside of my home life. I did some damage to myself. So I started exercising a ton, eating way less, and I had gotten very, very small for my frame. I'm still a big girl, no matter what weight I am, but I was very small for me. And I remember at that point being probably the most insecure and unhappy with myself because I wanted to just be smaller. I wanted to fit this mold of what beauty was that was determined by other people for me, and not by myself. After that period of my life, I started to slowly gain weight. I remember being in Minneapolis and still being insecure about the way that I look because everyone here is so beautiful, it's insane. But also still holding on to some of the body dysmorphic issues that I had, where no matter how small I was, I thought I was big. The classic definition. I even thought I was taller than people that I was not taller than. It's really weird. But anyway, when I finally got the size that I am now, about a year ago, I did an interview for Style Like You, for the What's Underneath project. I sat on the stool, I disrobed, I talked about myself, which has never really been easy. I'm learning how to do it. Realizing that I'm an artist and people want to know about me. I started talking about my body, which I like to ignore to just focus on music or intellect or deep thoughts. But I talked about my body, and at the end of it, I had my fro out and my underwear and no makeup, and that exists on the internet. If anyone who's reading this article wants to know what I look like in my bra and panties, no hair, no glamour, they can just go on YouTube. And I remember after that, I gained this really weird confidence in knowing that. I was like, there are no secrets anymore. I lived my life having all these secrets. Girdles, shapewear, wigs. I had a lot of secrets. And now they're out. The cat's out of the bag. So I kind of feel like I can live my truth because of it. I don't have anything to hide. And that is the most liberating feeling. And that, I was able to write My Skin. It was the first song I wrote in the vein of having this message of self-discovery and self-love. I haven't looked back. I love feeling this way. I have all of these women who I look up to now who look like me. I remember the women I used to look up to. This is so ridiculous. Were the cartoons Sailor Moon and Sailor Saturn. I was like 14 years old looking at Sailor Saturn as a realistic body type. She's a cartoon. She's drawn so unrealistically. No human being looks like that. They were role models to me. I was a weird kid. But now as an adult, I have these really realistic, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful style and body inspirations. Like, Gabby Fresh is someone who I just love so much. Her body's amazing and her style is so chic. I got one of her bathing suits, a two-piece, and I wore it in Jamaica and I felt so beautiful. I don't think I would have been able to do that a year prior. I feel really, really good now. It was a long journey to self-discovery and liking myself, but it came with a freedom of not caring what people think, because people are going to think it anyway, because it's there, and this is it. Interviewer. You once mentioned that you think artists like you and Kendrick Lamar, who were born in the late 80s, have a unique perspective. Can you expand on that a little? Lizzo. I think the kids who were born in the late 80s were very interesting. I'm very different from my sister, who was born in 83, and my brother, who was born in 85 even. We're 90s kids, basically, with 80s wisdom. Which is really weird, but our influence is so different. Our influence came from, like, and this is mostly in hip-hop, us believing that we were in this post-racial America. Our influence came from Hey Arnold and Rugrats and these shows that catered to the imagination of city kids, city life. It was all an illusion. But at the same time, all these late 80s kids who are artists are all waking up from that illusion and speaking on it. That's a really radical thing. It's almost like we're punks now. Hip-hop is in this crazy punk era and it's being led by the generations of 80s, 90s kids. I think there's something really special about that. I can't name one hip-hop artist who isn't woke and isn't speaking on something. They're all at least speaking up. We all feel like the reason we're doing this is to have a voice. There's no one doing it for no reason, and that's powerful. There was a ton of music for no reason in the early 2000s and late 90s, but now we're back. We're back to music with a purpose and music with a message. Interviewer, do you make any art outside of music at the moment? Lizzo, I stick to essays now. I'll put up some random essays on Facebook or Instagram. I don't know why, I just feel the need to write. I'm also looking at a painting I did with my brother. He's super creative, a painter, plays drums and piano, and he can draw like no other. I'm not very good at painting, but I did one of a fox and it's pretty cool. When it comes to art, yeah, I focus on music, but I write essays sometimes. It's a great way to articulate myself because I can get so overwhelmingly sad or angry or frustrated and helpless with a lot of things that are going on right now, to women, to people of color, to poor people. We're all being marginalized in different ways, and I feel like the only true way I can express that is through song or through an essay. Interviewer, earlier you said you didn't know how to take care of yourself at a certain point in your life. What do you do now? Lizzo, I Netflix and chill. I finally, for the first time in my whole life, bought a nice bed for nice beauty rest. An Ellen-endorsed mattress. It's so nice, and I just love my bed. I'm in hotels a lot, I'm on airplanes a lot, I'm walking around in cities. There's nothing more exciting than coming home and eating and sitting on my bed and watching Empire or something. I didn't watch television for so long. I didn't have a TV. I finally could buy a TV, and I watched Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown from the first to the last episode, which I believe is in Detroit, where I'm from. It was so beautiful, so emotional, and at the end of it all, I realized that I had departed, traveled with Anthony Bourdain. I could feel it in my body. I felt rested, but I also feel like I shared an experience. I realized that just because you're lying in bed doesn't mean you can't have an experience. I always feel like I'm missing out on something if I'm not up and out, but I also realized that's wear and tear on your body, your emotions. And I had a sensory experience while laying in bed and resting my bones, and that's important. I haven't looked back from that. I know I have to self-care. I also get acupuncture and go to a chiropractor, and I get Thai massage every month, and it is amazing. I pamper myself. All of the years when I wished that I could have this, a dream of mine since I was 14, was going to the dentist and getting all of my teeth fixed. I had so many cavities because I had highly acidic saliva. I went to the dentist this past year, got all my cavities fixed, deep cleaning, my wisdom teeth out, and it feels so good. I love taking care of myself. Ever since I found out that I love myself, I love taking care of her too. Interviewer, I feel like you're the only person who loves the dentist, but that's rad. Lizzo, I know. Everyone says that to me. I have two of the best dentists in the world. They're a married couple. They're adorable. They love music and come to my shows. They're so cute. They could have their own reality show. They make me feel so comfortable. I love dental work. I love having fresh breath and clean teeth. It's so weird. And that's the end of that charming article. This next one is also from Murky Mag, and it is an interview of a scientist called Rita Kalra. She's a physicist, and which is a complete sort of change from what we just listened to here about a musician. But in a sense, both of these women are really powerful, strong, self-developed women, I suppose. People who are following their dreams. So I thought that was in keeping with this idea of like Lizzo's body being a tuning fork, and this lady that we're about to hear an interview with, Rita Kalra, who she studies radiation, you know, so kind of like the idea of dedicating your body and your mind to this like one field that you're super passionate about. Okay, so this is by Beverly Bryan. When you talk about the big questions in life, physicist Rita Kalra has most of the same ones the rest of us have. For example, why are we here? But some other things on her mind are a little more unusual. She'd really like to know why there's more matter in the universe than antimatter, for one. And lately, her day-to-day concerns have to do with making sure space weather is safe for launching spacecraft. Her love of math and physics led her to Los Angeles and a career as an engineer for SpaceX, the space exploration company founded by Elon Musk. SpaceX made a huge technological breakthrough in December 2016 by landing a rocket. I'm sorry, that would be December 2015. There was a time when I dreamed of doing scientific research and even going to space, So I called Kalra up to find out what it feels like to help make scientific history happen. Beverly Bryan, what is your official job title? Rita, I'm a radiation effects engineer. That means I predict the ionizing radiation environment for our missions, determine the risk, and mitigate the harmful effects of radiation on spacecraft. The radiation comes from the solar wind and solar storms, the Van Allen belts, and galactic cosmic rays. I track the space weather whenever SpaceX launches a rocket to ensure that it isn't being launched into a dangerous radiation environment. Beverly, was there a moment when you were younger when you knew that you were totally hooked on science and that this is what you had to do? Rita, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to know how things worked. I constantly asked questions. I wanted to know everything. I wanted to know how electricity works. How does it power stuff? Why does thunder make noise? I've always been hooked on science. Beverly, have you answered some of your childhood questions about the world, or do you feel like there are still a lot of mysteries? Rita, oh, there are so many mysteries. Some of my burning childhood questions have been answered, but the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know. One mystery answered leads to 10 more mysteries, and it can go on and on. There's an infinite amount of things that are unknown. It can drive you crazy. But the reason I enjoy studying science, the feeling of satisfaction I get when I learn about some phenomenon in detail, and that it's not actually magic. And in physics, you are interested in the detail right down to the atomic or particle level. Sometimes what you end up finding is mind-blowing. Beverly, how do you explain your graduate work with antimatter to your friends and family? Rita, I usually start by asking if they've seen the movie Angels and Demons. The story is about the Illuminati. They go to CERN, that's C-E-R-N, in Switzerland, and steal a bottle of antimatter, and they try to use it to blow up the Vatican. So basically my PhD work was on that bottle of antimatter, but you can't blow up the Vatican or anything else with the amount that we created. The real purpose of my experiment was to study the properties of antimatter in order to answer questions such as, why is there more matter than antimatter in the universe? It's one of our biggest unsolved mysteries in physics. Matter and antimatter can't coexist because they annihilate each other upon contact. The standard model of physics, which is our most successful particle physics theory to date, predicts that equal amounts were created at the Big Bang. But if that were true, everything would have been annihilated, and we wouldn't exist. So there was actually a slight imbalance. And the question is why? One way to help answer the question is to measure the energies of antihydrogen, made up of an antiproton and an antielectron, and compare to those of regular hydrogen. The first step of creating and trapping the antihydrogen is what I studied. Beverly, do you talk to your mom about your job? Oh, yeah. She's really, really interested and keeps up with the news more than I do. Beverly, is she interested in science? Rita, she's a chemist. Beverly, has she been a role model for you? Rita, absolutely. She studied chemistry and then she became a forensic scientist. She works for the New York Police Department. I grew up learning about all the cool stuff she does and got to visit the crime lab. She goes to court to testify as an expert witness, and she's developed statistical methods of analyzing evidence that she has to defend in court. Beverly, what has been the most frustrating moment of your career in science so far? Was there ever a moment where you thought about quitting and doing English or something? Rita, I definitely had thoughts like that during my PhD research. They weren't so dire that I wanted to leave the field altogether. There were times when the experiment would break, and it would take forever to fix it, and it was unclear whether we'd be able to successfully fix it or not. We had some hurdles, and sometimes when we had to work really long hours. The uncertainty of whether or not we would be successful would get me down sometimes. But in the end, we made progress and advanced science. It's the nature of scientific research. You just keep working hard, and it'll probably work out. Beverly, what keeps you going when things are frustrating? Rita, what keeps me going is the thought of the big picture. The big picture right now is awesome. It's space exploration and going to Mars. Also, every successful rocket launch and mission is immensely gratifying, so I look forward to moments like that. Same with my PhD. I never forgot that I was doing really cool research on a really important question in physics. I just try to think about the goal. Beverly, what's been the most rewarding moment? Rita, I was lucky enough to be a part of 2 SpaceX landings. That was one of the greatest moments of my life, the first time we landed. I was really proud to be part of that. Beverly, what was that day like? Rita, my heart was pounding. I was nerve-wracked the whole time standing in front of mission control, just watching the Falcon 9 launch in dead silence. 10 minutes later, it came back to Earth and touched down on the site. The crowd erupted into this deafening roar. Everyone just went crazy. Beverly, do you ever think about going to space? Rita, I would love to go to space. There are space tourism industries, and if I ever have enough money to do that, I'm definitely on board. The closest I've ever been to going to space was on a zero-gravity parabolic flight, on which I also experienced lunar and Martian gravity. Beverly, how close do you think we are to living on Mars? Rita, we are trying to get people to Mars in the next couple of decades. Beverly, okay, but why go to Mars? Rita, because we have not gone there yet. It would be an incredible adventure for humankind. We've sent plenty of landers and rovers there. We have a lot of data on Mars. The next step is to go there. We need to live there as backup in case mankind wipes itself out through nuclear war or bioterrorism or goes extinct due to natural disasters. Beverly, so how would we do it? Rita, first we would have to terraform the planet, create an atmosphere, basically by global warming the planet, melting the ice caps to create carbon emissions. There is already water on Mars, and oxygen would have to be produced. Beverly, what do you think would help more young women to pursue careers in science? Rita, I think exposure and the way you are brought up really helps. For example, I had my mom. She's a successful scientist. It didn't even occur to me until later in life that science was a male-dominated field, or that there were different societal expectations for boys and girls. That let me develop confidence in my abilities. I think the realization that women in science is not unusual would help more young women pursue careers in science. Regular outreach activities through schools that have female scientists come in and speak about their work or allow students to visit at their workplace, for example, would be very helpful. Female science teachers at a middle school and high school level are also a fantastic source of inspiration. All right, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Romani Arrowsmith, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.